news, reviews, commentary, not just another podcast.
Out of the Ordinary Big Ball Broadcast.
Oh, son of a bitch, son of a bitch, son of a bitch, gun. You thought I was going to say son of a bitch, didn't you?
Now here comes your host, Kyle A. Barron of the World Team.
Welcome, one and all, to the Big Ball Broadcast, episode 49. My name is Kyle Hebert. I'm an LA-based voice actor. You can hear me as Kiba on Naruto, Uzumaki Chronicles for your PlayStation 2.
And this is your co-host, Otherworld Steve. I am an anime and video game journalist, as well as webmaster of KyleHebert.com.
This week, Wii users waking up with a bit of Wii-gret. Sony messes up again! A bit of inspired casting news for NBC's Heroes. Peter Jackson's involvement with The Hobbit clarified. Congress approves unlocked cell phones. We're going to explain what that means. And random things that only happen in the movies. Otherworld Steve, how are you doing this week, sir?
Otherworldly.
Okay. I told you about this great deal on Amazon on Thanksgiving Day where they had 1,000 Xbox 360s, the core units, available for an unbelievable price of $100. Were you successful in gaining one of those units?
I and most people on the East Coast can sum up our experience in one word. Fiasco. Apparently, they, meaning Amazon, couldn't handle the server load of millions of people hitting refresh on 20 different tabs on their internet browsers. The whole East Coast went down, locked up, couldn't do anything, couldn't refresh, couldn't get the page to load. Apparently some people on the West Coast were able to snatch those puppies up, and unfortunately no, I'm still 360 less.
Oh man, well hopefully something will happen in the next few months, if not Christmas time. What console do you really want the most out of the next gen stuff?
I hate to say it, but I'll come clean. A 360.
Yay! Win! Yay for converting. I know if we go back in our early episodes of the Big Ball Broadcast, Steve was holding steady and fast to admit he was not a Microsoft fan. He would not support Microsoft. We both kind of changed our tunes. Yes. Ooh, sexy. So I eventually got a 360. I'm in love with it. I think it's a fantastic system. So much the fact that I don't think PS3 can measure up, at least not right now. We're going to go into this whole Sony fiasco shortly here.
It's because, you know, not only are PS3s not available on store shelves right now, but, you know, it's taken an issue with the price. And the Wii is the console to have this holiday season, but it isn't next gen. It doesn't have a HD output or anything. So for me to enjoy really nice HD games, the 360 has been on the market now for over a year. So in my eyes, it's a tried and true system. It seems to be the big hit this holiday season because it's the only console available readily at retailers. I know with the Xbox Live support, it's the cat's meow, as the kids say.
Yeah, absolutely. I was telling Steve just the other day how frustrated customers will walk into the store, and if they can't get a Wii or a PlayStation 3, they're going to get what is available. And what is available is the 360, or even, dare I say it, a GameCube or a PlayStation 2.
PlayStation 2s are flying off the shelves right now as well because they are the second cheapest console on the market right now, just edging out the GameCube as far as getting a good console on the down low.
Yeah, I was in Best Buy, and I believe $129 can buy you a DS Lite or a brand spanking new PlayStation 2.
I think the GameCubes are going for somewhere between $79 and $99.
GameCube is a perfectly wonderful system. Lots of great games available for it. I would encourage anybody to pick up a system like that.
And for the kids who don't know, the biggest game right now, it seems, this holiday season, Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess, that is also available on the GameCube. I believe that hits retailers mid-December.
Fantastic! Alright, well let's dig into our Big Ball Broadcast mailbag. Conveniently located at thebigballbroadcast@gmail.com. Haley writes, "Hi Kyle and Steve. In the most recent podcast when you were talking about the old propaganda cartoons, I remembered something. A few years back I did a school project about the early beginnings of animation, which includes animation during the World Wars. While researching for it, I found a VHS titled Bugs and Daffy Wartime Cartoons. It's a collection of shorts that were made during World War II. Some of the cartoons are pretty mundane, but there are others that are definitely not politically correct. Included in it was the Gremlins from the Kremlin short. It's listed as Russian Rhapsody, and a cartoon called Daffy the Commando, in which Daffy goes behind enemy lines and confuses the very stereotyped Nazi soldiers with his crazy antics, leading up to the finale where he parachutes into a Nazi rally and, get this, hits Hitler on the head with a mallet. The video is out of print now, and the video has somehow gone missing from my library, but I did find a few DVDs that contain the shorts as well. There's some Looney Tunes collections that feature some of the more mild ones, and there is one other DVD that contains the Daffy short I mentioned. Unfortunately, the DVD is out of print too, but there are used copies of it on Amazon. Thanks for the input there, Haley. I will definitely check into that. That's some good stuff there. The good old propaganda stuff. Do you own any of that, Steve?
I do have the Disney's Collector 10 that has the World War II propaganda stuff on it, but I don't have any of the Warner Brothers stuff. I was wondering if some of these big sets that are coming out had any of those on it. I haven't done enough research. I'm tempted now to look into those sets.
Yeah, they just came out with box set number 4 for the Looney Tunes Gold Collection, and I highly doubt any wartime stuff will make it on there. There's plenty of stuff in the archives at Warner Brothers, and I think it's just a matter of time. Moving on, another email from Christopher, who writes, "Hey guys, great show as always. I've been wanting to write in, but there wasn't much to say or ask until now. I was wondering if either of you know anything about the rumor going around about the new Dragon Ball Z DVDs, which is that since the show was originally animated in full screen, Funimation cropped the footage in order to give the illusion of a widescreen aspect ratio. New film scanning tech can blow up even the smallest negatives to HD size, but let's face it, DBZ is not a very recent show, and anime made for TV wasn't widescreen in the 80s. On the other hand, Funimation has access to pretty much all things Dragon Ball. Is it possible they stumbled upon some long-lost footage? I offer this enigma to you, the experts. Stay geeky." Well, I do know that they did remaster the video in HD. It's not coming out in an HD format. It's coming out in regular DVD. There's been a lot of buzz about this online, especially on Funimation.com's forum, where this whole widescreen issue has got a lot of buzz. Some fans have posted screen cap comparisons from the trailer from this new release and compared it to the original release, where there appears to be a fair amount of image loss due to cropping. Now, for those who don't understand widescreen, the black bars on the top and the bottom do not cover up or crop any images. Just think of it as a camera that has zoomed out all the way. The original shape of the film when projected on a movie screen is more like a rectangle. A TV is shaped like a square. So when you watch a full screen version on TV or something that's animated for TV, the image is zoomed in to fit the entire space. Funhack, the admin on Funimation.com's message board, says, quote, "Many seem to believe that this process will result in a loss of image / content. What you will actually be getting with the digitally remastered and restored DBZ episodes is more of the viewable film that was not used for traditional 4:3 TV version. 4:3 is the aspect ratio of regular TV. 16:9 is widescreen. He goes on to say, "The footage was digitally transferred from the original Japanese film footage. The new transfer will actually allow for more of the original footage to be seen on screen." Unquote. Other posters on the forum say that the original releases were zoomed in, which supports Funhack statements that a widescreen would in fact give you more image. So we'll have to see when this actually comes out. The Vegeta Saga is coming out on 5-disc, 39 episodes in a box set for $50 starting in February.
Here's my 2 cents on it. I do have some Dragon Ball Z original animation cells, and I can say they're not square. They're not TV ratio square. They are rectangular, but I don't believe they're 16:9. I do think you'll see more of the image, but I can't see how you can watch them on a widescreen TV and not have some image cropping. I mean, you might see more than you originally did, but the tops and bottoms, in order to meet up the aspect ratio, I think there's going to be some cropping on the sides.
Like I said, it's very controversial right now. The fans are crying for offer a full screen version, don't even have a widescreen, or at least have the option available. I'm going to be recording some more narrator for some of these recuts for Dragon Ball Z when I visit Dallas at Christmas time, so I'm going to dig around and see what I can find out about this whole widescreen issue. Are images, in fact, being cropped? If so, how much and why the decision was made to do that?
What makes it controversial for me is the fact that I've almost completed my Dragon Ball Z on DVD collection, and then Funimation released the uncut first 2 sagas, which I'm still in the process of picking those up, and now they're releasing these HD remastered versions. It's almost like they've got a touch of Lucasitis over at Funimation.
Yeah, just a bit. As far as I know, those uncut seasons didn't even complete their release schedule.
Correct.
So the people who've been collecting those all along have kind of been left in the cold, and now they have to start over again. It's like, oh, that's not cool.
The remastered HD DVDs are coming out in season sets. They're at a really good price.
Yeah, and if the whole double dip, triple dip issue really bugs you, you have a choice as a consumer. You don't have to buy it. You don't have to buy the new ones, but it's sounding like an attractive sell to me because you got the remastered issue. You also have a version with the English dub with the Japanese score. You also have the original dub with the original dub score.
The other issue is something you and I spoke about in length last night, and that was the fact that no anime company to date has released a true HD version of any of their properties. Nobody's released anime on HD, DVD, or Blu-ray, and I guess that's the only area where I get antsy. It's really great that Funimation is going to release for the first time an incredibly clean version of Dragon Ball Z. I'm just worried that a year or two from now they're going to release the Dragon Ball Z collection on Blu-ray or HD DVD.
Yeah, and I guess it's wise that anime companies do wait because the average fan can't afford this next-gen technology. What can you do?
Bitch, whine, and complain.
Well, if you want to bitch, whine, complain, or share your thoughts, please email us at thebigballbroadcast@gmail.com or throw us a voice comment on our listener line, 818-574-3607.
And also on the heels of the Dragon Ball Z HD Remastered, here's yet another DVD set I need to go pick up, like, ASAP. Everybody knows I am a huge Dragon's Lair fan, and some people who have been listening for a while may have recalled I built a Dragon's Lair arcade cabinet. Well, it seems that Dragon's Lair, for the first time ever, has also received a high-definition film transfer. For the first time ever, you can experience the stunning visuals of Dragon's Lair in full high-definition video. Using the most sophisticated film transfer technology, the Smash Shut arcade game can be now played in high-definition and fantastic 5.1 surround sound on your computer. Relive the arcade experience with this remastered HD adventure, completely arcade authentic. Fully interactive gameplay, digitally remastered from the original film, restored original soundtrack for the first time in 5.1 surround sound, stunning classic cell animation from Don Bluth, three different viewing resolutions, and watch mode. You can sit back and just watch all the beautiful animation unfold before your eyes. So again, me, big Dragon's Lair fan, gotta pick this bad boy set up. I've seen it on eBay for about $35. Not too bad.
Very cool. Yeah, I think I may have to grab that puppy as well. This HD stuff, the higher resolution, definitely looks good if you have a plasma or an LCD or whatnot. And even if you don't, these remastered versions of anything, they actually do look really good. They do sound good if you have a surround sound system too. They actually kind of are worth the purchase.
I look at what they did with Akira when they released the special edition in widescreen for the first time ever on DVD a few years back. And having grown up with the VHS version, when you pop in the remastered DVD, it's absolutely gorgeous, and they actually spend quite a bit of time in their making of documentary showing you some of the restoration process of how they removed all the specks of dirt and the hair and the fuzz and whatever from the film transfer. So yeah, it is going to be a big trend now, and I think we're going to see a lot of re-releases of a lot of stuff we like, and I really can't complain about the double dip in that respect because you are getting a much better quality product.
Now, with the advances in technology, hopefully from here on out, animation, live action, whatever, will come out with its definitive version from the get-go, and you don't have to worry about restoration and remastering 5-10 years from now or whatever. The studio, the whole double dipping thing, that may or may not go away, of course, because there's money to be made there with director's versions and uncut, never unrated, never seen before seen footage, blah blah blah.
From the sound of things, it looks like we're finally going to get the definitive Star Wars collection next year to coincide with the 30th anniversary. Lucasfilm has confirmed that there is going to be a 30th anniversary set on sale next year, and it looks like this may be the one that will include some of the outtakes and deleted scenes that we've been waiting a long time for.
The holiday special?
I don't think that's ever going to see an official release from Lucasfilm.
Maybe not. Well, if you guys are privy to something that maybe we don't know or haven't covered yet, feel free to throw some news our way. We'll give you props for it, of course. Or if you just want to give a comment or a question or whatnot, send us an email at thebigballbroadcast@gmail.com or call us, leave us a comment on our listener line. The number is 818-574-3607. Now, on to the news. Steve, tell us why Sony is screwing up yet again.
Sony has found defects in its digital cameras. Sony this past week has announced a defect in some of its popular CyberShot compact digital cameras and offered to repair affected cameras free of charge. The issues include the liquid crystal display screen of 8 different camera models not displaying the image correctly, and some of them are actually quite distorted. Another problem is the fact that some cameras may not take photos at all, and this is officially from Sony Corp. Affected are 8 CyberShot models sold between September 2003 and January 2005 in Japan, and in a similar period globally. Sony will be repairing these for free for the consumer, but certainly not free for Sony.
I might add to that story that I do own one of the models affected by this. I own a Sony CyberShot. I actually use it to shoot my Kyle TV video blogs that you see on YouTube or whatnot, and it's a great camera, and I have been blessed. I have had no faults with it. I guess I'm one of the lucky ones.
I'm thinking so. I'm thinking you spared yourself God knows how long of a turnaround. We know 8 models were affected. We don't know whether it translates into how many cameras on the market. Could be a 6-month turnaround for all we know.
Yeah, my particular model was $500 at the time, so not a cheap toy.
Jeez. And Sony's debacle continues. If you went out this holiday season or prior and went out and got a gorgeous 1080i HD TV so that you can play your next-gen console in all its beautiful brilliance, this comes from Engadget, and I'll read this little paragraph verbatim. As all you owners of HD TVs that can only do 1080i, we've got some bad news for you. Sony Computer Entertainment America head honcho corporate communications David Carriker apparently retracted, or at least backtracked, on Sony's previous statement about the increasingly infamous 1080 issue, the one that won't let PS3s play games at 1080i and HD TVs that don't support 720p. According to Game Daily, Sony cannot actually confirm this issue can be fixed with a firmware patch, although they're not denying it either, and that they are, quote, looking into the issue and haven't stated any actions that will be taken regarding it.
Yeah.
Now, there is an option for you if you can't wait to see if Sony can fix that, but I'll say right now it's not a cheap fix. For those of you that are interested, the PS3 does not have hardware analog scaling chips. This means that the PS3 will never be able to upscale. The only way to upscale would be to buy a upscaler that Sony sells that will upscale your signal to 1080i. It was designed with the PS3 in mind, and it only cost about, $1,500.
Oh, God. That's insane, dude.
It's Sony's ES7.1 channel surround sound AV receiver. Apparently right now it retails for $1,499.99, and this will give you the ability to upscale your sources to 1080i. Sony isn't confirming or denying if this is a major issue. When the PS3 did launch, they did say that they would be releasing a firmware update over the internet that would fix this problem, and a lot of customers are saying it didn't fix the problem. It's looking more and more that it's a hardware issue with the PS3. We don't know if Sony's going to offer a fix for that where you can send in your PS3 and get it fixed, or if you're going to have to drop this $1,500 to upscale it, if upscaling's that important to you. This is a wait-and-see scenario for all the PS3 owners.
That's some pretty majorly bad news, considering most consumers have their collections already converted from VHS to DVD, and you can walk into Target or Best Buy or Walmart and buy a progressive scan DVD player that will upscale to HD resolution for $150 or less. To spend $1,500 after you've spent $600 on a PlayStation 3 to get it to upscale your DVD collection? That's not in the cards there, buddy.
Now, as we discussed a few podcasts back, it is still a heated debate about who's going to win the next-gen battle, be it HD, DVD, or Blu-ray. And we discussed about how when Betamax and VHS came out, it came down to who the porn industry was going to support on which format was going to win. And at the time, they supported VHS over Betamax, and that's why we all have VCRs that play VHS. Now, a pornographic distributor did come out publicly a couple weeks ago and state that they were going to support Blu-ray simply for the fact that everybody who bought a PS3 basically had a cheap Blu-ray player in their home now. This is going to be an issue with upscaling and whatnot. Who knows? I mean, it could sway the industry the opposite way and go with HD, which apparently Microsoft doesn't have an issue with right now with their standalone drive.
That's right, and I am proud to say I am an owner of the HD DVD drive. I haven't done some research to find out if it does upscale. They did have a massive firmware update recently for the HD resolutions and all that. Although Microsoft has its own debacle right now with its TV and movie download service. People are getting screwed and downloads are timing out and people only have a 20 gig hard drive with the 360, and that's a totally separate issue. But this whole upscale thing, that's pretty major, I would think. For anyone who doesn't want to just rebuy their DVDs ever again, you want a player that's going to bring the resolution up, or at least somewhat, if you have an HD setup.
Unfortunately, the other big issue that Sony hasn't necessarily said, but a lot of the retailers are, and even some of the video game websites that have been reviewing some of these games, they're kind of politely reminding the public, the PS3 isn't something you want to run out and buy if you don't have an HD TV, because it's kind of like installing a phonograph in your car so you can listen to music. You're just not going to have that quality, and there was that issue with Dead Rising on the 360, where if you're not playing it on an HD TV, you you can't read the in-game text. So I'm wondering how big of an issue it would be to get a PS3 and just hook it up to a regular tube TV, and how much of that are you really missing out on?
Very, very true.
And now, if you go out and you spend the $2,000 or so on your nice HD TV, and you spend your $600 on the PS3, and you're still not getting that quality image, that true HD image, they don't have feet left. They've shot themselves in the feet so much, so now they're just starting to like shoot their armpits and stuff. I don't get it.
They're running out of body parts to shoot.
Exactly.
So with all this crap going on with Sony and the PS3, you've had the launch just be a big misfire. Units being brought in a much lower quantity than anticipated, violence erupting, and then now some game developers are going, well, we were going to make some exclusives with the PS3, but I think we're changing our mind here.
It looks like it'll be a few months before we get any compelling PS3 exclusives as more games jump ship to the 360. The low initial numbers of PS3 shipped around the world may hurt the system more than Sony is letting on. Two PS3 exclusives have since moved to the 360. Those are Fatal Inertia and Bladestorm The Hundred Years' War. Those two titles are moving over to the Microsoft console. If you look at the release list for the PS3, you'll also note a long dry patch for games from now until a few months into 2007. If you've already bought a PS3, there isn't much for you to look forward to outside of ports.
I'd say you pretty much have a $600 paperweight. Well, not totally, but it just seems to have a lot of issues. People reporting it's buggy, the Blu-ray thing is not displaying just right, they're supposed to fix that with a firmware update, the low numbers delivered. Oh, I would hate to be working for Sony right now. That's all I have to say.
To be somewhat fair, I think the issue is with early adopters in general. The first batch of 360s that came out, they're basically plug in and watch explode, and now we're hearing some things about the Wiimote with the safety strap to keep it from flying off your hand, where the straps are breaking and they're flying off your hand. And there's actually a case reported that we found through Dig of a kid who was playing and the strap broke and the Wiimote smashed into the wall-mounted flat-screen TV, which is no more. I think it is an overall issue with early adopters. It just seems this situation is just hitting Sony so much harder than everybody else.
Oh, very, very true. And speaking of the Wii, many users are waking up with a bit of Wii-gret. Nintendo was nice enough to actually pack a game with their new console. There's a concept. Wii Sports. Now, for the hardcore gamers out there, some are actually reporting a little physical soreness the next day. Yeah, players are complaining of aching backs, shoulders, and elbows from the amount of exertion involved from the usage of the Wiimote. In Rochester, Minnesota, Jeremy Scherer and his wife spent 3 hours playing tennis and bowling Wii games. Jeremy mentions his score improvements at the expense of his shoulders and back that were still aching the next day. He says, quote, "I was using muscles I hadn't used in a while," unquote. Jeremy is a computer programmer who calls himself as not very active, but is now on the nightly Wii workout plan to get in better shape. Blaine Stewart of Rochester, New York, mistakenly whacked his fiancée, Shelley Heffele, while playing tennis, and also accidentally hit his dog while bowling, despite the message Nintendo flashes up on the screen before each game, which says, "Make sure there are no people or objects around you that you might bump into while playing." Ryan Mercer, a customs broker in Indianapolis, lifts weights several times a week, but that hasn't helped much with the Wii. After playing the boxing game for an hour and a half, his arms, shoulder, and torso were aching. He says, "I was soaking wet with sweat, head to toe. I had to go take a shower, and the next morning I had trouble putting my shirt on," says the 21-year-old avid gamer. Now, what are the doctors saying? Nothing new, really. They say, stretch out, make sure to take care of any injuries afterwards, says Lana Kang, an orthopedic hand surgeon, who explains, it's just like athletic play. You know, me going to the gym, everyone always says you have to stretch before you work out, or else you're going to get three times as sore as anything. And apparently, I guess this is like the next revolution of Dance Dance Revolution for people who are normally inactive. You know, the typical gamer is sluggish and overweight and not active, and, you know, suddenly they're using muscles they didn't know they had.
Stop describing us to the BBB audience, okay, Kyle.
Granted, okay, we're not all fat. It's kind of a weird deal. I do want the Wii, but do I want to be flailing my arms about and ruining my furniture, much less my expensive plasma TV? I don't think so.
Prior to the Wii's launch, and I can't confirm or deny this because I haven't been to Walmart, but there was a very persistent rumor that Walmart was not going to set up display units inside the store because they were afraid of any liabilities due to injuries from somebody flailing about with the Wiimote. Now, I'm wondering if anybody's going to take that on a personal level. You're playing Wii Sports at home and you dislocate your shoulder or whatever. Is anybody going to get that harebrained scheme to sue Nintendo for injuries?
In this litigious society, I think so. It's just a matter of time. If you guys continue to listen to this particular episode of the Big Ball Broadcast, I am going to play some audio at the end of this episode where I went over to a guy's house. His name is Avi Melman. He has his own podcast. He interviews voiceover people, but actually he got a hold of a PlayStation 3 and a Wii. So you'll be able to hear my gut reactions as we play through several of the games on both systems, and we'll give Avi a chance to plug his voiceover podcast, which I think you guys will dig if you're interested in, you know, dub acting and cartoon voiceover. He's interviewed some pretty interesting people, so we're going to give him a chance to talk about that, and then I'll talk about my reactions to the next-gen consoles that Steve nor I have been able to get our hands on just yet.
Neither of us were able to get our hands on a next-gen console. The Big Ball Broadcast isn't supported by Sony or Nintendo or Microsoft. We're not getting any residual checks for mentioning them or whatever, so I can only assure our listening audience that these are your true, heartfelt, honest, first-hand experiences here.
Totally unbiased, raw feelings. Take them as you will, folks, and it'll be pretty interesting to see who will win the mighty console slash format war.
Yay.
Peter Jackson's involvement with The Hobbit has been called into question over the past few weeks. He actually sent out a press release slash email saying that due to legal entanglements involving the rights, you know, Jackson and his company are currently involved in a lawsuit with Lord of the Rings backers New Line Cinema over profits over the final installment, Return of the King. Now, he issued this statement. He declared that he would unfortunately have to bow out because of these circumstances. That obviously didn't set too well with fans, and then rumors started swirling around that another big-name director would be brought in. Steve, do you know who that was?
That was Spider-Man fame Sam Raimi.
Can you imagine a Lord of the Rings-type film directed by Sam Raimi?
For those of us who have seen the Spider-Man trailer that's making the rounds, there's a brief scene of Peter Parker reaching up for the engagement ring that he's going to give to Mary Jane, and everybody goes, oh my god, that was like so taken from Jackson's Lord of the Rings with Frodo and the ring. And so, you know, maybe he was doing a little screen test for New Line or whomever. Actually, I can't imagine it. I think that Jackson's reign on Lord of the Rings really penetrated into pop culture. I don't think his cinematic style is necessarily new or revolutionary to us now. I think it's something that a director can mimic quite easily.
Yeah, and a director's stamp on a film certainly makes a huge difference. Whenever you see, I mean, obviously the Bond films or the Superman films or even the X-Men films, you definitely feel a difference in tone when a different director takes the reins.
Oh, certainly in the Harry Potter movies with the new direction, where it took a much darker and grittier approach than the earlier lighthearted versions. I think what it boils down to is fan outcry. I think the fans pretty much demand that if you're going to make another of Tolkien's properties into a movie, or two in this case, you want to bring Jackson back. It wouldn't be the experience unless you had that name attached to it.
That's right. So recently, Saul Zaintz, whose company currently owns the rights over Tolkien Enterprises, has come forward in an interview on a German website proclaiming it will definitely be shot by Peter Jackson. Next year, the Hobbit rights will fall back to his company, and he says, I suppose that Peter will wait because he knows he will make the best deal with us, and he's fed up with the studios. To get his profit share on the Rings trilogy, he had to sue New Line. With us, in contrast, he knows that he will be paid fairly and artistically supported without reservation. This guy, who is in charge of the actual property, it seems, is claiming that Peter Jackson will be behind the camera on the new Hobbit adaptation. Obviously, it makes sense. New Line's not going to sit and go, ah, yes, Peter Jackson, who is suing us right now over money. Let's make a new film. It's like, obviously, you have to clear that stuff up first.
And I wonder if King Kong had anything to do with the decision-making process.
I don't know. That's universal.
As far as his directorial credibility.
It's hard to say. Obviously, when you have something that profitable, the next project is watched with intense observation, I guess. And, you know, it never meets expectations. It's like, I remember Robert Zemeckis, he did Forrest Gump, and what did he do next? He did Contact. He didn't do nearly as well. I liked Contact, actually, but...
You would.
Shut up, you! So, yeah, a director's follow-up, I would hate to even be Peter Jackson at this point, having hit a home run with the Lord of the Rings trilogy, and, you know, what if The Hobbit just doesn't even feel right at this point?
And speaking of directors and movies... have some movie news involving you, actually. You did get to audition for a background character in the upcoming Pirates of the Caribbean Part 3 of the trilogy.
It was a little disturbing at the audition for this Pirates. It was an extras casting call. They made all the guys take their shirts off, and then they took Polaroids of them. I felt so degraded.
You
I felt so used.
Felt dirty, went home and showered. I'm a good boy. I'm a good boy.
That's right. Oh, the bad man touched me. No, it was weird. No, I haven't heard anything back, unfortunately. I don't know. Obviously, it's the Thanksgiving holidays and the Christmas holidays. I'm still hopeful that I'll get a call back, man. I mean, it's extras. It's background people. Come on. How hard can it be?
I would imagine being called in for an extra role and having an opportunity to show your stuff in front of the director, not a studio assistant, but the director. Kind of like being nominated for an Academy Award. You know, it's kind of an honor just to be nominated.
Absolutely. Not every day. I mean, there he is, Gore Verbinski, who directed the first two Pirates and now is directing the third one. And there he is directing all of these possible extras in this scene for the camera. Yeah, that was just trippy in and of itself. So I do feel extraordinarily lucky just to have that opportunity. I'm keeping my fingers crossed, and I will gladly report it here what happens because of that.
And it's also great that you had that opportunity because it shows what dedication and loyalty the director has to this project, where he's so involved in even casting the extras and the background characters.
Absolutely. Fantastic stuff. NBC's hit show Heroes is moving ahead one quarter impulse power. George Takei, currently the announcer on the Howard Stern radio show on Sirius Satellite Radio and more famously known as Mr. Sulu on Star Trek, will be appearing on Heroes as Hiro Nakamura's father. Hiro's character is actually a huge Star Trek fan, so that's a bit of inspired casting, I would say. I haven't actually seen too much of Heroes. I've seen some bits here and there. It's caught my eye. I definitely want to pick it up when it comes on DVD because I know it's got a big buzz around it, breaking George Takei, who's got one of those signature voices. I can't wait to see what happens when he shows up on the show.
Heroes is a show that seems to really be at least generating a lot of buzz. I don't know about critical acclaim, but it's certainly something that's being discussed all over the place at water coolers and on the internet. And it's something that certainly caught my eye as well. I have the feeling it's kind of like a Lost or a 24 type series where if you miss an episode or a part of an episode, you're kind of lost going into what's going on in the next episode. So I think I agree with you where it's a series I'm going to wait to come out on DVD, then I'll be able to check it out in its entirety without missing anything, because it just seems like a show that you have to like very carefully scrutinize and pay attention. And you and I both with our ADD and OCD disorders, I think we're much more suited to watching it on DVD as a season set.
Oh, totally. And what I really like about this particular, it's on NBC, who owns the Sci-Fi channel, so you get to see Heroes rerun on Sci-Fi in the middle of the afternoon, which is nice for me because I totally forget, blank out at the TV schedule. I don't even watch the TV Guide channel on my cable lineup, so I have no idea when anything is on anymore.
As geeky as I am as co-host of this geeky podcast, I don't have a DVR recorder, so I miss so much of what's going on. I think I need to take a step into the next century.
Hey, same here, dude. I don't have a TiVo or a DVR either, and I'm thinking it might be a worthwhile investment.
Because otherwise, all we have is YouTube.
Oh dear, we can't have that.
Cell phone unlocking legal for the next 3 years, anyway. The newest list of exemptions from the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, the DMCA, is out, and the Register of Copyrights is recommending 6 exemptions this time around. If you've been hankering for the legal authority to remove Sony's rootkit to unlock your cell phone, then this will be big news to you. If you are hoping for the ability to make backup copies of your legally purchased DVDs, you're still out of luck. Every 3 years, the Copyright Office develops a list of approved exemptions to the DMCA's anti-circumvention protections. This is the third time through the process, and the government has approved the largest number of exemptions to date, though they're still incredibly narrow. The one that's most likely to be of interest to consumers is the one allowing cell phones to be unlocked and used on other networks. The Copyright Office has allowed this exemption because the software that prohibits users from accessing the phone's firmware has little to do with copyright and much to do with the business model. The underlying activity sought to be performed by the owner of the handset is to allow the handset to do what it was manufactured to do, to lawfully connect to any carrier. And that's what the government wrote in its explanation. It goes on to quote that this is a non-infringing activity by the user. The purpose of the software lock appears to be limited to restricting the owner's use of the mobile handset to support a business model rather than to protect access to copyright works itself.
So, could you perhaps use a Sidekick 3, which is currently exclusively for T-Mobile? Could you unlock that and suddenly have it for Singular?
I did do a little bit of research on the topic, and I found out two interesting things. Yes, that's exactly what this means, and it goes for anybody. If you buy a Motorola Razr or whatever, you buy a Sidekick, you buy a BlackBerry, whatever you buy, you don't have to get any carrier-specific plan. You can take it to any carrier and get any plan you desire. The one thing that's interesting with T-Mobile, of which you and I are both a customer, as long as you're a T-Mobile customer for 90 days, you can call customer service, and they will tell you how to legally unlock your phone, no strings attached.
Nice. Very cool.
This is big news for everybody. I mean, it was last year or the year before that Congress was able to tell the carriers that you can drop your plan with one subscriber, take it to any other subscriber, and keep your phone number. So that, on top of this, is just bliss for the mobile phone community.
And I'm wondering if that will affect companies like Motorola and Danger, who make the Sidekick 3 and all that. Will that just make any exclusives suddenly a moot point? Why even bother making an exclusive phone for a certain carrier if you can legally, as a consumer, have it unlocked?
What it sounds like to me, and this is just strictly speculation at this point, is that the developers of the technology itself will have to add more and more to their phones because they don't know what service plan you're going to subscribe to and with which carrier you're going to get that plan with. So it sounds to me that you're going to get a lot more functions and software updates and different packages and availabilities on your phones so that you can go to your different carriers and be able to access those services.
I think this is a very, very cool thing. And anytime you can empower the consumer like that, fantastic.
One of the biggest problems that I have with the Sidekick is that you can't import your own ringtones. Technically, you can if you want to download Danger Developer's Kit, and then you kind of take a risk there of breaking your phone, and I don't know how T-Mobile feels about replacing phones if you use the dev kit, but I'm hoping by unlocking the phone that you can be able to access services like that and be able to import your own ringtones and whatnot.
Absolutely. I know that's a big selling point for people, is to be able to personalize their ringtones and wallpapers and whatnot. At least recently with the Sidekick, there has been a little hack that people can customize wallpapers and stuff, and at least there's that.
But not when it comes to the ringtones. You have to buy them exclusively from T-Mobile, and even if you buy a ringtone from somebody online or a different ringtone provider, you cannot import those into your sound bank.
Mm-hmm. Pretty interesting stuff. Now we're going to go in the weird WTF sort of realm here with random things that can only happen in movies. This was a rather extensive list I found on iDigitDesign.com, but I'm only going to read some of my favorite ones here. Things that only happen in the movies. When the hero and the villain finally meet, both guns are immediately lost and they take turns to punch each other. You're very likely to survive any battle in any war unless you show someone a picture of your sweetheart back home. Then you're in trouble. Computer passwords are very easy to crack. They are always the third thing you think of. The ventilation system of any building is the perfect hiding place. Nobody will ever think of looking for you in there, and you can travel to any part of the building undetected. I'm thinking of Die Hard, right? That was 88. We're still finding people digging around in the ventilation system. If a good person dies with their eyes opened, a friend will tenderly close them. If a villain dies with his eyes open, the camera will linger on his face until just before the actor has to blink.
Whoa!
Every single sporting event is won by the underdogs with a last second winner. If you decide to start dancing in the street, everyone you bump into will be able to dance and know all the steps. All police services, particularly in New York, have an unlimited supply of police cars. They also have the unluckiest and worst trained drivers, resulting in head-on collisions, smashed parking cars, falling into water, and of course the obligatory flying roll causing the car to land upside down and crushing the lights with a siren fizzling out as if it's running out of batteries. Television news bulletins usually contain a story which affects you personally at the precise moment you turn it on, after which you turn the TV off. Don't panic if you're heavily outnumbered in a martial arts fight. Your opponents will wait patiently to attack you one by one by dancing around you in a threatening manner until it's their turn to fight. All single women have a cat. Cars will explode instantly when struck by a single bullet. And lastly, no matter how savagely a spaceship is attacked, its internal gravity system is never damaged.
That is awesome.
And that is just scratching the surface of things that only happen in the movies.
Becca and I were watching Ferris Bueller's Day Off just prior to recording the podcast, and the comment you made about everybody dancing, I think Ferris Bueller's Day Off has one of like the biggest dance choreographed numbers in cinematic history. It's when Ferris Bueller goes on the parade float and starts singing one of the Beatles songs. Everybody the camera pans to, they're all Fred Astaire's.
He's not even singing it. It's just a karaoke. He's just lip syncing.
And it's wonderful how the girls on the float knew how to choreograph their performance with his, having never met prior.
Of course. Yeah, I guess that's the whole theory behind musicals, which I am personally not a fan of, really. It's like this hyper reality where you're just having a conversation and suddenly you just randomly burst into song. What? Then everyone around you knows how to dance.
You don't do that? Like when you go to Taco Bell or whatever?
No. Should I?
Maybe I need to videotape my antics more, I guess.
I guess so. I mean, I've been known to say life is a musical and then I just feel silly. But, you know, you can turn anything into a song.
And believe me, some people have.
Yes, yes. And they've gone on to win awards because of it. And here we are doing a podcast.
Why does it hurt when I pee?
Why does it hurt when I pee? Exactly.
Thank you, Mr. Zappa.
Oh, yes. The great Frank Zappa, ladies and gentlemen. Today's audience going, who? Hey, we're old fogies. What can we say? All right. Well, that's all the news we have for you now. Stay tuned. The show is actually not over yet. I'm going to turn this over to myself, a pre-recorded segment over at Avi Melman's house. Avi Melman owns an animation studio he's going to tell you about shortly. And he is also a proud owner of a PlayStation 3 and a Wii. And I'm going to give you my impressions of the games as we start sticking them in there and see what happens. And he'll also tell you about his new voiceover podcast, where he's got some pretty interesting voiceover talent lined up, and we'll tell you how to find that and all that good stuff coming up. So, Steve, thank you for a remarkable show full of great content as always, and thanks for doing the editing. I sure don't miss that. So now, through the magic of editing, I have been transported to the Chateau de Avi Melman.
Hi, I'm Avi.
And Avi here is one of a select few lucky folk on the planet Earth to own both Next Generation Systems, which launched recently. You are a proud owner of a Wii and a PS3.
If you say so, yes.
Do you consider yourself lucky?
I consider myself poor.
Ah, yes. And how did you acquire these consoles? Did you brave the cold weather and stand in line for weeks on end?
No, I paid for someone to stand in line and then bought, well, at least the Wii we bought on eBay. The other one is the PS3 is a Japanese import system.
Okay, now is that region free? Does it play American games?
PS3 is region free, except for PS2, PS1 games, and Blu-ray. So all the US PS3 games will work on the Japanese PS3.
Let's see, now I met you because I saw a post on a Yahoo group about voice acting. You do a podcast about voice acting, or you interview voice actors, so this is your chance to plug that show.
Yes, we have the VoiceOver podcast, which airs, well, I guess it airs whenever the heck you want it to. On the iTunes store, just do a search for Avi Melman or Voice-Over, and you will see a very strange drawing of me with some podcasts on it, and that would be the VoiceOver podcast, which features interviews for both fans and aspiring voiceover actors with all the big talent in the industry, both up-and-coming and well-established.
So far you've got Steve Staley, who was Kadaj in Advent Children. Then the next week you had Richard Horvitz from Invader Zim. And who's up next on your third episode?
Ricky Simons, who is the voice of Gurr on Invader Zim.
Yeah, I'm particularly excited because, you know, everyone knows I'm not only in the industry, but I'm a voiceover geek. And I'm very glad that you, Avi, have taken the initiative to produce that kind of podcast.
I'm glad that you're glad that I did what I did, because someone has to tell me I did good.
You done good. So here we are at your apartment, and we're going to check out the Wii.
Chateau d'Avi.
And for those who need the phonetic spelling there, A-V-I. You know, just like a video format.
I'm more compatible, though.
You could be a QuickTime file or a WMV.
True. Well, hopefully not a WMV.
All right, fine. I will put a link to the podcast in our show notes. It is on your site as well, right?
Yes, it is. That would be www.avimelman.com.
AviMelman.com.
I've got so much Wii on the brain right now. When you said a link to the podcast, I thought you were talking about Zelda.
I came all the way over here to play with your Wii.
Oh, dear God. and my wife is here watching.
Kinky.
Sorry, honey.
All right, so here we are. We've popped in Wii Sports on the Nintendo Wii. We've come up to a screen that says, reminder, securely fasten the wrist strap. So I'm going to do this. Now, I'm a lefty. What do you think, Avi? Should I do this on the left hand?
Whichever hand is lamer so that you don't throw it at my screen.
Okay, well, I don't want to throw anything and break your expensive LCD high-def setup here. So I've wrapped this around my wrist, and now I just hit A to continue.
And B is the trigger on the bottom.
All right, so Wii Sports has a nice little selection here. Tennis, baseball, bowling, golf, and boxing. So I've highlighted tennis, and with my trigger finger on the B button, I've selected that, and I'm hitting A at the same time. We're going to lock into that. Make sure there are no people or objects around you that you might bump into while playing. Avi is now stepping away.
I am safely on the other side.
Yes. You actually do have to do the wrist motion just as if it were a tennis racket. And I'm doing that with my left hand. So far, so good. Graphically, not next gen. Kind of up there with maybe Nintendo 64 or GameCube. You're actually getting some sound effects. There's a little speaker on the Wiimote. This is not top spin, graphic-wise, but I can see how it'd be quite engaging. I can also see how easy it is for the Wiimote to come flying off your hand and into the furniture and causing lots of damage. So again, you have the wrist strap. You gotta hold on to it pretty tight. In true Kyle Hebert fashion, I have lost the game. I suck. This is extremely fun. I can see how this is quite addictive. Controls are extremely responsive. Now I'm watching Avi move his arms like crazy. Have you experienced any soreness due to this?
Yes.
Okay, he has. All right, because we reported earlier on this episode that people are reporting being very sore from Wii Sports. And I can definitely see why now. If you're willing to look kind of silly while flinging your control around, then you're going to have a blast with the Wii. I have now experienced this firsthand, and I can say it with a enthusiastic thumbs up. I want a Wii. Breaking a sweat there, Avi?
This is Dance Dance Carpal Tunnel.
So now, I'm going to try out Motor Storm, a demo on PS3. The interface is similar to the PSP. Now, the PS3 remote itself feels very light. Pretty much the same thing as a PS2 remote. It's wireless. Avi has let me know that when you charge it via the USB port on the console, you can get about 30 hours. Motor Storm, which I believe is on the demo units at Best Buy, isn't it? Okay, I'm selecting a truck that looks like Optimus Prime's colors from the movie. All right, the load time is similar to a PS2 game, you know, at least maybe 10 to 15 seconds. Graphically very pretty. Now, because Sony lost the whole rumble thing, there's no rumble pack in the controller. Let's see what happens when you go over the cliff. The game is definitely visually on par with what you'd find on the 360. The controls are very responsive. I'm, of course, showing my extreme prowess at sucking at the game as every car passes me. Definitely not going to win this match. I blew up. Yay for blowing up. Steve would be happy. I'm hearing a Nirvana song on the soundtrack. The launch titles for the PS3 are a little bit lukewarm at best. A lot of the titles are available on other systems. A launch lineup can drastically affect one's desire to purchase, if you know what I mean.
Although it is the cheapest Blu-ray player on the market.
Just like the 360, for $200 you can buy the add-on HD DVD drive, which I'm a proud owner of, and I am enjoying HD movies now. Avi, thank you very much for having me over and letting me try out your next-gen systems and everything.
You're quite welcome.
So, my recommendations, if you've got the money, I'd say pick up two Wiis.
So you can have a Wii-Wii?
You definitely want to have a Wii-Wii. I think the best thing to do as far as the PS3 is concerned for the mass general public, like myself, who don't have one, wait for more availability. Wait for them to work the bugs out. Any who's will make sure and get in touch with the Big Ball Broadcast. Listen for the various ways to get in touch. The ending credits are coming up. So say goodnight, Avi.
Good night.
Bye-bye now.
Visit our official blog page at bigballbroadcast.blogspot.com. Donations are graciously accepted and appreciated. Please email us at thebigballbroadcast@gmail.com. You can also leave a voicemail on our listener line at 818-574-3607. Additional announcements by Maria Vu. Remember to stay geeky.
That was totally.